Hello, I'm Khadijah Scantlebury, and this is number 0515, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0515. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Chris Herman, author of The Youthful Art of Midlife Travel, who after his wife of 40 years suddenly died, at the age of 62, he decided to spend a year backpacking his way around the world.
Well, it's interesting. I always used to sort of jokingly laugh at these young people taking off in another gap year. You know, they should be more responsible and go get a job like the rest of us. But then I was thinking after that my life changed and I felt like I was just wanting to push myself out of the comfort zone just to do a bit sort of different to see what opportunities life would present. And I thought, well, I may not be 18 anymore, but I have good and fitness. So I thought maybe this gap year is not such a bad idea after all. And of course, in my case, it was my senior gap year.
Jade Stanley, who runs Sex Doll Official in Britain. In addition to sex dolls and toys, she also sells comfort sex dolls designed in the image of your lost loved one. How did the bereavement dolls come to be?
It was a request, and obviously from that request, you know, came further requests. But as soon as customers could see what my business was capable of producing technology-wise, they realized that they could, anything that they want, I can make into a reality. And it just so happened that some people who have lost a spouse have come to me to have dolls recreated, and that has provided a lot of comfort to them. I mean, loneliness is a massive issue in the UK, huge issue, of which I truly believe is because of social media.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guests later. The person who told you this was show number 0515 was my niece, Khadijah Scantlebury, who just graduated from high school. Congratulations, Kiki. Love you. And thank you very much for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? The Benny House Hotel in Myerstown, Pennsylvania, was evacuated after police responded to a report of a bomb threat there on June 23rd. When officers arrived, they found 28-year-old David Oxenreader, who lives at the hotel, and the homemade bomb he claimed to have made next to a dumpster outside the building. Oxenreader told police he made the bomb to get their attention because he was frustrated that his attempts to warn officials about aliens hadn't been taken seriously. According to the criminal complaint, Oxenreader said he encountered a UFO and aliens in 2014 who told him humans need to start being good people or else they were going to destroy the Earth with a nuclear laser beam. Police disarmed the device and arrested Oxenreader. Whoa, wait a minute. Did David share the timetable of said destructive nuclear laser beam? I mean, before they lock him up, and you know they will, we need a few more answers. Anyway, a 26-year-old man identified only as Chang from Guangdong, China, went out for a Friday night of drinking with friends on June the 7th and returned home to find that his keys were missing. Someone inside let him in and he went to bed to sleep it off. The next morning, Chang woke up with a sharp pain in his chest and went to the Dongguan Hospital, where an x-ray revealed the missing house keys lodged deep in his esophagus. Doctors first thought emergency surgery would be necessary to retrieve the keys, but with the help of a muscle-relaxing drug, a gastroenterologist was able to pull them out through his mouth. Okay, nowhere in this story is an explanation of how the keys got there, but perhaps in the future, pockets or a string around his neck might be a more prudent idea. Okay, early bird travelers at Detroit Metropolitan Airport got a rude awakening on June 21st when an unnamed man tried to pass through a TSA checkpoint entirely naked. The man approached the checkpoint and removed all his clothing, then removed a barrier and approached a metal detector. Officers didn't allow him through the metal detector, so he ran around it, where he was caught and covered with plastic trash bags. A bystander said he was calm and compliant while being detained. Law enforcement determined he was not a threat and took him to a local hospital. I'm sure they're going to give him a checkup from the neck up. Well, I guess they didn't have to ask him if he had anything to declare at the TSA, although there was plenty of time for a cavity search. An unnamed woman arrested earlier was released from the St. Louis Justice Center on the morning of June the 5th, sort of. Jail staff gave her clear instructions of how to get out of the building, according to Corrections Commissioner Dale Glass, but instead she got on the elevator, pushed all of the buttons, and got off at the fifth floor, where she then exited through a fire door into a stairwell, locking herself in. 2.5 days later, staff finally saw her peering through a window in one of the doors. The woman had made noise during her confinement, but Glass explained that the jail is a very noisy place, and the staff couldn't figure out where the noise was coming from as she was moving from floor to floor. Paramedics were called, and the woman was offered hospital care, but she declined, saying, "No, I just want to go home." Well, if she's ever arrested for something in the future, at least authorities know that she's not exactly jailbreak material or a flight risk. In Holmes Beach, Florida, police there posted a query on their Facebook page on June 15th regarding an unusual item that had washed up on the shore and was turned in by a local resident, a prosthetic ear. Bet it could hear the ocean. A social media did its magic, and the ear and its owner were reunited 5 days later. A Beaufort, South Carolina couple had been vacationing in the Tampa Bay area, and the man was putting the rubber ear in his pocket for safekeeping when a wave knocked it out of his hand. Police Sergeant Brian Hall said he would mail the ear back to its owner, as prosthetic ears can be very pricey. Yes, I understand that. Apparently a prosthetic ear could cost you an arm and a leg. And speaking of lost and found, former baseball star 56-year-old Lenny Dykstra went to eat lunch at a Jersey Mike's Subs restaurant in Linden, New Jersey. Okay, let me stop here for a brief moment to point out that, for the record, I have always thought that at the very least, Lenny Dykstra was always completely insane. And that's the most positive thing I can say about Lenny Dykstra. Anyway, he's at the restaurant, and as he told a reporter later, "The bread was so hard on those subs, I took my teeth out and put them in a napkin, folded it up, and forgot them there." Okay, let's stop again. If the bread was so hard that he needed to take his teeth out to eat a sub, then what did he do? Suck on the bread like a baby sucks on an arrowroot cookie until it turns to mush? Anyway, he was nearly home when Dykstra realized he'd forgotten his dentures in the napkin. "When I went back, the worker said they threw all the napkins in the garbage. He said, I told them there's no bleeping way I was leaving without my bleeping teeth." And you know he must have sounded like a cross between Elmer Fudd and Daffy Duck spouting that profanity. He and a friend, tag team wrestler Sprinkles the Clown, no really, not making that up, started digging through the restaurant's dumpster to find them. The teeth, custom made by a fan out of bone marrow and valued at $80,000, was finally located after 9 hours of dumpster diving. You know, the odd thing about this story is in all the years, including covering sports, that I've mentioned Lenny Dykstra on the air or in print, it's one of the first times he isn't doing something completely stupid. And after hearing this story, you know that's saying a lot. Also, if I were to write a screenplay involving a scene where a former Major League Baseball player and a tag team wrestling clown were dumpster diving for for $80,000 worth of teeth, I would seriously be laughed out of the pitch meeting. Yeah. Anyway. We have one more story before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Porter, Indiana police responded to a report of a reckless driver who driven through the grass into the parking lot of a church. When officers arrived and approached the vehicle, they smelled alcohol. According to the police report, the driver, 47-year-old Robert Maddox, explained that he was here for an AA meeting. When asked if he had been drinking, he said, "Not today." The report continues, "I asked when the last time was, and he said, yesterday." A test revealed a blood alcohol level of 0.247%. That was more than triple the legal limit. He was charged with operating a vehicle while intoxicated. You know, if he takes shortcuts in AA like he does getting to the AA meetings, that might be why it's not working. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? When Chris Herman's wife of 40 years suddenly died from cancer, he mourned her death before deciding to step out of his comfort zone to embark on a 12-month backpacking adventure around the world. And he undertook this solo journey to 23 countries when he was 62 years old, using only a carry-on size backpack. He now teaches people how to live their international travel dreams, no matter their age or income. Chris is the author of The Youthful Art of Midlife Travel. He joins us via Skype from Austria. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, good to be with you, Peter.
Nice to have you on the program with us. Were you someone who had a wanderlust, who liked to travel beforehand, or did this all suddenly come up on you?
I guess I've always had a background in travel. I mean, my wife and I, well, with the children, we did various vacations, and then with my wife. But what made this one different was it was the first time I've ever been solo traveling, and particularly for a length of 12 months. So that was quite outside the comfort zone.
It was almost like, you know, students have a gap year sometimes. It was almost like you decided to have a gap year at 62.
Well, it's interesting. I always used to sort of jokingly laugh at these young people taking off in another gap year. You know, they should be more responsible and go get a job like the rest of us. But then I was thinking after that my life changed and I felt like I was just wanting to push myself out of the comfort zone just to do a bit sort of different to see where life would what opportunities life would present and I thought, well, I may not be 18 anymore, but I have good health and fitness, so I thought maybe this gap year is not such a bad idea after all. And of course, in my case, it was my senior gap year.
Now, you are your father, you are a grandfather, you're a father of three, grandfather of seven. You know how protective kids can be of their parents as they get older. When you came up with this idea of traveling the world by yourself with a backpack, did any of your children or your grandchildren put up a fuss and said, hey, what are you doing?
No, well, I guess it was a bit out there. It was different, and I guess actually in some cases quietly they were probably a little bit envious, I think, because they were at that stage in life with a little bit more bound with sort of family responsibilities. But there was one particular time when I was going from Colombia up to Panama and crossing the border, and some of the younger people I was traveling with, they liked to party, and we were told not to take any drugs across the border in case you want to end up in a Colombian jail for 10 years. Not that I've ever done drugs, but I that did cause the children some concern, that crossing, when they heard about where I was going.
With the passing of your wife, was this an idea of a trip that you decided upon after she had passed away, or had you discussed it with her during her illness?
No, it was something really quite that came up after. And I think really the driving point was that, I mean, her death was quite sudden. And in fact, of a week of becoming ill, she passed away. But it was on the deathbed when you know, she lay there in the throne of ours, is what she kept saying, that just really, it just struck me and stuck with my mind. And she kept saying, like, even she couldn't believe it's happening. She just said, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe it's happening. And it really just kept sticking in my mind that as time went on, that you can't take life for granted, that life can be taken away just as quickly as her life. And that's why I felt, well, you know, why should I wait around for the ideal time? And that's why I thought, well, let's just do something different, step outside the comfort zone. And so it was really, it was from her, one of the final words that just resonated with me.
In planning this trip and going on this journey to 23 countries, you had traveled with your wife before. Was it a lonely period of any time that you did these travels, when you know, would see some amazing vistas around the world or travel to places and you know, kind of wish you had your wife with you at that moment?
Definitely. If I had the choice, I would have definitely traveled with my wife. Although, mind you, it probably wouldn't have been as adventurous as what I was, and I probably would have ended up single anyway if I did exactly what I did. But certainly in some form of travel, I would have loved to have done it with her. But in answer to your question, in terms of the loneliness factor, it was interesting. Like, I was obviously traveling alone, but I was never really lonely in that true sense. And that was really for a couple of reasons. One is that, I mean, you meet some fantastic people along the way. And in fact, the people we're visiting in Austria at the moment were friends that I met while I was away. And so it was some great friendship. The other thing was, and that's through social media and through the cell phone, always having contact with my family back home, and it might be just a quick video call or a chat here or chat there. So it was that was sort of really my background social base while I was traveling around and doing things and meeting other people.
Was this 12-month adventure continuous, or did you come home at any time during the 12 months?
No, it was continuous. All I booked was one round the world ticket, one stop off in Spain, one stop off in Central America, and one in Southeast Asia, and nothing else was planned. I just took each day as it came.
So where did you start from, and where did you end in your...
Okay, well, I started from Australia, and then my first stop off was in Spain, and I actually stayed there for 3 months. And that was, to me, is one of those little lessons in life. I arrived in Valencia. I didn't know a soul, didn't know anybody. But then after 3 months, I really had this great little social group. And I often think, if I had have let my fears before I left, who tried to stop me, you know, all the worries, you're too old, you're going for 12 months, what if you got sick, da-da-da. But it just proved that just by stepping through those fears, it was just a great experience. So then from Spain, then I just went backpacking through Central America and the top part of South America, through from Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, Guatemala, etc., up to Cuba. And then, like I said, a couple of countries in South America. And then in Southeast Asia, from, Cambodia, Thailand, Myanmar, and just around those countries there.
You spent 3 months in Spain. Was that the place you spent the longest? And if not, where? And also, where did you spend the shortest time?
No, certainly Spain was the longest. So that was really a highlight, just the fact you can go there and then ended up with that nice little social group. Some of the shortest times, and that was the way I travelled, backpacking. If I liked a place, I stayed. If I didn't, I moved on. So probably the shortest time, it was a bit hard to say, they were probably spread out. I mean, every country I went to, there were some great features about the place. So it's a bit hard to say. They were all great experiences.
Do you have a timetable when you did this trip, or was it a situation of you stayed in the place as long as you wanted and then you moved on?
That's exactly right. The only timetable I had was just those three stop-offs and 12 months to return. And in between that, like I said, if I liked it, I stayed. If I didn't, I moved on. And some places I thought, like in a place called San Juan del Sur in Nicaragua. I thought I'd just be here for a couple of days. It's a nice little beachside resort, but I got involved in some community projects where American school leavers would come down and they'd take on a school, they would paint it, plummet, and so I got involved in that project there for a while, and so that was some of the rewarding aspects of the travel.
We're talking to Chris Herman, who is the author of The Youthful Art of Midlife Travel. We'll take a quick break and we'll continue talking to Chris here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And we're talking to Chris Herman, who is the author of The Youthful Art of Midlife Travel, here on the Stuff File program, a show that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Chris spent 12 months backpacking around the world, and he undertook this solo journey to 23 countries when he was 62 years old, using only a carry-on size backpack. As I mentioned, he's the author of The Youthful Art of Midlife Travel. And Chris, what did you learn about yourself in the year that you were traveling abroad?
I think the biggest takeaway is that, I mean, I had a whole, probably 100 reasons why I shouldn't be doing it. As I said before, like going for 12 months, you're going on your own, you're too old, what if you got sick? And all those reasons, those that Mr. Logic voice in our heads that stop us from doing that thing that sort of we really want to do. And it was probably a bit unusual because the gut feeling just came up, and every time it came up, those voice in the head, don't be so stupid, reason for going, gut feeling just come up and just say, shut up, get on with it, you're going. And I think that was a takeaway point from it, is just to really do what your heart's telling you to do, and just deal with those fears that we all have.
You've written the book, The Youthful Art of Midlife Travel. Was it your intention before you traveled to write a book, or was this something that came about as you did your travels, or only when you concluded your travels?
No, it was all quite random. Like, as I said before, I never planned to take a gap year and just go backpacking. But then when I did it, I started blogging. I initially started blogging just to keep my family informed of where I was. But then it sort of grew from there, and then people were following it. And then people said, well, you should. They enjoyed the stories each week and the bit of humor and the bit of knowledge and adventure. And they said, you should write a book. So that's where I wrote the book from, that from people's suggestions. And then what I'm finding now is that people have now been inspired by the story, and in their own way have actually then, I guess, had the courage to face up to those fears and now are inspiring others. So to me, it's a ripple in the pond type of effect, and that's great to see. To me, that's very rewarding.
What did your kids have to say upon your return?
Well, they were, they'd be following me, and we'd been in constant contact, and I think they were, I guess, really quite proud of the fact that I sort of stepped out there and did it, and yeah.
Were they jealous in any way, the fact that you had a chance to go away and just live your life for a year traveling the world?
I think, like I said originally, you have those stages in life when you're single and you're free to do what you like, and then you get sort of married and kids, and that tends to restrict your life. And I suppose from that point of view, it was they could relate to that from perhaps in their single days. So this is my single time, second time round.
When planning this trip, was it your intention to travel with just a backpack, or was that something that was born out of necessity?
Well, that's actually a good point because I think a lot of these things are stepping stones. Like I originally took a suitcase and a backpack. And when I was in Spain, I had the suitcase. And then I thought, well, then when I went to the next stage in Central America, I thought, no, I don't need this. And so it was sort of a next stage, if you like. And so it sort of really evolved, if you like. And now, like, I'm doing this trip with a new partner of mine in the US and Europe for 3 months, and it's the same thing. We just got a carry-on luggage-sized backpack, and really, literally, you do not need any more, even in some of the colder periods when we're in North America.
So what time period are we talking about? It was a year. When did you do this trip? Because obviously you're still traveling. We're talking to you right now in Austria. So when did you do that one-year trip? From when to when?
Yeah, that's I left Perth in West Australia in July 2016. And for the first couple of months, I actually drove up about 4,000 miles to visit my children who were scattered around the remote parts of Australia. So, I left in September 2016, Australia for overseas, and came back in September 2017.
And how much traveling have you done since that one-year trip?
Well, I did a bit of traveling around Australia. I think I did about 3 laps, I think, just some work with the book. And this is really the first trip away I've done since then, this 3 months trip to North America and Europe.
And now that you've written the book, you become sort of an authority on how to travel lightly and especially as an almost senior. I wouldn't say senior, although you're 62, but, you know, as a senior, what kinds of reactions and questions are you getting from people who either hear your story or read your book?
Well, I mean, one of the inspiring things, like I mentioned, is that when people read the story and they get inspired to do their own thing. Like, there's a lady from New Zealand. She emailed me who'd lost her husband recently. And after, she was actually in Perth and visiting her son, and she heard there's a segment on the news about the story on TV. And it just captivated her. And she, next day she bought the book, and then a week later she took leave from her work to do her own form of travel to Europe. And to me, that's the key point, is to face up to, we all have our own fears that stop us from doing what we really want to do. And it doesn't have to be a gap year like I did, because to me that was stretching my comfort zone. But to other people, it may be something smaller, even bigger. And that's the key point, is just to face up to our fears. Because I think that's the problem, as we get older, we tend to, our fears and our comfort zone tends to restrict us. Because that's the one thing I came back from my gap year, was that, you know, there's all these young people out there exploring the world and experiencing cultures. And I was thinking, where's our generation? I mean, sure, we didn't have the opportunity then, but we've got it now. And I think we're missing out on all the fun.
What kind of things did you have to overcome as far as your fears?
Well, it was things like I came up with this crazy idea just to go traveling, backpacking, around the world. And it was those fears, like I mentioned, that I was, for 12 months, that was probably the biggest thing I had. And plus going solo, I'd never done that before. I'd always been with my wife, with my family, and previous, when I was, before I got married, it was with friends. So that to me was the biggest challenge that I had. It was the fear and things that wake up in the middle of the night and think, well, what, you know, what if I got kidnapped, you know, and just crazy dumb things like that. And that was probably the biggest thing that just, it was basically, I was my worst enemy.
You spent 3 months in Spain, but again, you did travel to 23 other countries. From your perspective, I know it's a lot to choose from. What was one of the highlights of that world travel?
Well, certainly, as I mentioned, Spain was great because I was just living there as a local. Places like in Central America, because it's a little bit different, they're not the popular tourist trails. In fact, a lot of people, they said, well, don't go further north, than Nicaragua because it's too dangerous. But when I was there, I noticed people going into Honduras and they're coming out, so I thought it can't be too dangerous, so I went anyway. But it was really, once again, it was that opportunity. If I had have listened to, once again, those other people's expressing their fears, you know, I would have missed out on some really fantastic sort of experiences. And the thing is, with a lot of those places, I mean, everywhere is dangerous. There's danger in our own cities. Some of these cities that we think are more dangerous, just they have bigger areas that are more dangerous. So we just need to, you know what areas to go to. And so places like Guatemala, Honduras, Belize, you know, parts of those are all great locations. Of course, in South America, the Machu Picchu, Galapagos Islands. And the Galapagos Islands is one case where how I traveled, I didn't really know where Galapagos Islands was. I'd heard of it, but it was just through talking to people as I went, and people were saying, well, that was a highlight of their trip. And when I'd hear people say that, I thought, okay, well, that's where I'm going then. So that was very much how I sort of planned the trip as I went.
With all this travel under your belt and you continue to travel, what's it like when you're at home nowadays?
Well, I suppose that's the problem with travel. There's always more places to go, and that's the trouble. There's so many places to see in so little time. So it's a matter of then working out the next opportunity.
What did you do for a living? How were you able to afford this travel?
Well, it's an interesting point that, in fact, I would say it was actually cheaper to actually travel than it was to live at home. And the reason was, because it was over a long period of time, I mean, I wasn't staying in five-star hotels with gold taps or whatever. I was staying in budget accommodation. But the accommodation everywhere I went was excellent accommodation. It was clean, and if the bed was clean, the bathroom was clean, well, that was a big plus. And then the countries I visited too, like they were Central America, Spain, Southeast Asia, they're all cost-effective countries. So in my case, I was renting at the time, so I sold the furniture, stored what was rest, handed back the apartment keys. So I had a lot of savings there, which I would normally you'd be paying out. And secondly, when I finished driving the car up, I sold that, so there's more savings. So all those savings went to travel, and I was earning a bit of income while I was traveling with an online business that I had at the time. So in essence, the living expenses, like I said, it was cheaper traveling than staying at home.
So you've done this year travel. You've also traveled with this book as a book tour. What's next for Chris Herman?
Well, the world is the oyster, really. And what I'd really like to do is facilitate other people that would just like to have the urge to sort of step away from the tours or the cruises or the resorts, and just to really explore a more immersive, adventurous cultural experience. So that's what I'm working towards, is being able to facilitate, provide programs that help people to achieve that.
Chris, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. I know you're very busy and you're traveling all over the place. It was a little difficult tracking you down, but we got you. So thanks for being on the program.
No, it's a pleasure to be here with you, and thanks for having us.
Chris Herman, author of The Youthful Art of Midlife Travel. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the page for this program, which is show number 0515, and you'll find links to Chris's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to a woman who makes sex dolls in England. Plus, we do have an idiot of the day coming your way. And much more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Google Podcast or Apple Podcast button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Let's get back to the stuff. A teacher in Fort Pierce, Florida Central High School has been arrested for allegedly stealing $512 from the school. Not a lot, especially compared to what she allegedly stole from her own students, more than $3,000. The school's bookkeeper noticed the shortages after two school fundraisers and called in the St. Lucie County Sheriff's Office. 47-year-old Sharonda Johnson was charged with 9 counts of grand theft, 2 of petty theft, and 2 of tampering with a witness for allegedly telling one student that if anyone asked about giving the teacher money, the student should say, "You don't remember." What did Johnson teach? Criminal justice. Yeah. Enough theory. Time to study the practicals. And still with teachers, here's a piece of free advice. If you're a substitute teacher, perhaps it's not a good idea to use a classroom as your set to shoot a porn video. A former substitute teacher fired for allegedly filming pornographic material inside a classroom has also lost her job at a liquor store because of the video. The teacher was let go in connection with an improper criminal incident that happened at El Campo High School in Texas. A school official confirmed that the teacher produced porn in a classroom and a workroom last month. The school says no students were involved. The school district received a tip involving the substitute and informed El Campo Police and the Texas Education Agency. The female teacher's name has not been released, and police are investigating. She was employed for 3 months. You know, losing your job like this could drive someone to drink. Unfortunately, she also lost her job at the liquor store, so there goes her company discount. A dirt bike rider taunting an Allentown, New Jersey police officer wiped out just as another police cruiser arrived, and a woman got the crash on video. Police said they were called at about 4:30 p.m. for the bike riders, who had T-shirts covering parts of their faces. Jenny Betancourt said she was sitting in her backyard, where she can usually hear dirt bikes and ATVs racing about a block away. On this day, though, three bike riders ducked into an alley behind Betancourt's house and then onto the street. One rider dropped his bike and took off on foot. Another then started driving past, popping wheelies and flipping the middle finger. After doing that a few times, he then face-planted right in front of another police car, and of course, that was all captured on video, a video that has since gone viral, and you can see it on the Stuff File Program Facebook page. The rider took off running, and both of the bikes were reported stolen. Police are looking for the drivers. Well, the cops could start looking for people suffering from road rash. Yeah. Milwaukee police say a 20-year-old man accidentally shot himself when he believed he was about to get robbed. Authorities say the man was walking in a residential area on the north side of the city at about 12:30 a.m. when he saw two people walking toward him. Police say that's when the man pulled out a gun and accidentally shot himself. The man was taken to a hospital to be treated, and police say the gunshot wound is not life-threatening. But I'm guessing that the combination of stupidity and timidity will eventually do this guy in. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Okay, right off the bat, I'm going to chalk up this next story to bad parenting. A San Diego mom is thinking twice about handing her cell phone over to her toddler after her tech-savvy tot, unbeknownst to mom, bought a $430 couch online while playing with the phone. Said Isabella McNeil, "I was just so shocked. I thought, did I buy a couch in my sleep?" Isabella has two daughters, a baby girl and her two-year-old big sister, Raina. McNeil has been in the market for a new couch and was recently browsing through options on the Amazon app on her cell phone. Last week, as McNeil sat on her couch at home and browsed Amazon, Raina, in true toddler fashion, walked up and said, "Mama, phone! Mama, phone!" Not realizing that she was the adult in the room, McNeil gave her daughter the phone. Raina unwittingly pressed the Buy Now with One Click button on Amazon. A few days later, while she was at work, McNeil received an alert on her phone that read, "Your couch has shipped." She was confused, and it was also too late to cancel the order. The couch, as promised, came right to her doorstep in a big cardboard box, so now she's trying to sell it because it would set her back a couple of $100 if she tried to ship it back. But even though she sees the humor in the situation, she says she has learned a lesson that she's sharing with other parents. She said parents, herself most certainly included, should be more aware when handing their phone over to their child. Make sure all the apps are closed. Make sure your passwords are fingerprint locked. Make sure they don't know your number password, because kids are a lot smarter than we think, she said. Wow. She shared all of that wisdom in three complete sentences. I can do it in less than 10 words. Don't give your phone to a two-year-old! There. Problem solved. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Jade Stanley runs a company called Sex Doll Official. In addition to the dolls you would expect from such a company, they also offer an interesting bereavement service. Comfort sex dolls in the image of your deceased loved one. Jade joins us on the line right now from Birmingham, England. Hi, Jade.
Hi there.
Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Oh, no, thank you for having me.
First of all, let's go back to the beginning. How did you start this company in the first place? Never mind the bereavement part of it.
Everyone is always so interested in this. Basically, I'm just a businesswoman, first and foremost, and I stumbled across an article in a newspaper about the sex doll brothel. And I had seen a lot of articles about sex dolls in the press. And it just kind of, it pricked my imagination, excuse the pun. And I just started to think about sex dolls and, you know, people just the perception of sex dolls and how they could help people. I have an autistic child, and I have a few autistic family members as well, and I've started to think about how potentially dolls could be used to help helping matters, you know, where people are socially awkward and didn't have maybe the accessibility, we'd be able to have proper physical relationships. So I started as Extol Rental from there. And from that, I then went on to customization, and that's how the Brood / Comfort Doll come about. And I think the thing that has shocked me the most about this industry is that people have dolls for comfort more so than anything else.
Okay, so again, before we get to the bereavement part, you just said something that I have to pick up on, and that is sex doll rentals, which means you get these things back?
Yeah. So I did do it. I don't offer that service anymore, but I did do it. Every doll that I rented out, I ended up selling to the customer. And to be honest with you, it was quite a lot of hard work, as you can imagine. So, and the business is evolving constantly because I now do Daddy Love Gloves, which are both in the fleshlights, and I also do designer dildos. It's just, the business has just evolved. It's constantly evolved, and it's evolved through learning about what people want and how they want it.
Okay, so I've been to the site, and I noticed that you have sex dolls that are made up to look like people who are actually in the sex trade, like porn stars, for instance. So was this the next step, since you already had dolls that were made up to look like actual living people, that you carried forward to the bereavement side of things, to have dolls made up of someone who has recently passed away?
It came to me, yeah. I mean, it was a request, and obviously from that request could be, you know, came further requests. But as soon as customers could see what my business was capable of producing technology-wise, they realised that they could, you know, anything that they want, I can make into a reality. And it just so happened that some people who have lost a spouse have come to me to have dolls recreated. And that has provided a lot of comfort to them. I mean, loneliness is a massive issue in the UK, a huge issue, of which I truly believe is because of social media. Social media making people feel very isolated and bringing about a lot of anxiety. So that's why it's another thing that my dolls can be used for, is pure and simple comfort, just to have somebody there, basically.
And I understand the comfort part of it, but I'm just wondering, it just seems kind of eerie, only let's say somebody passes away, either a grandmother or a grandfather, and the living spouse decides to get this comfort doll. When you go over to grandma's house, is grandpa still sitting in his favorite chair, but kind of not blinking, or what?
Well, yeah, the thing is, it may not be your preference, it might not be my preference, but who are we to say what is right or wrong? If it brings comfort to somebody, then surely that's a fantastic thing, as opposed to an eerie thing. So you have to look past it. I think we have to be so broad-minded these days. There are so many things out there that, like I've just said, are not necessarily our own preference, but it does not make it wrong.
Now, I know you work hard to make the dolls look as accurate and human-like as possible, and I'm just curious, when one makes a bereavement doll, do they make it in the image of the person at the age they were when they died, or do you get people who say, you know, I've been with my wife or my husband for 40 years, I want a doll of when I first met them, or something like that?
Well, it varies, to be honest. I mean, I think the press have gone to town on the Brood doll aspect, but it is such a very small part of my business. So, you know, I know that that makes my business sound very interesting, but it's so much more than just a Brood doll. The Brood doll element of my business is just such a very, very minor part. So the people who have done that, you know, that person hasn't necessarily been an older person.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Now, I saw a television interview with you, and you were talking about, again, the intricacy of this. For instance, the hair. It's the hair is put in strand by strand?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a very complex, complicated process. We found that implanted hair gives a far more realistic look, and it takes a little bit extra time to do it. It is implanted, like I said, strand by strand, but the result is fantastic. It just looks amazing, really amazing.
And how long does it take to make one?
Depends on, you know, how many alterations that you do to it throughout the process, because obviously we contact the customer each step of the way. So it can take anywhere between 8 to 16 weeks, depending on those changes. You know, 16 weeks is a long time. I've only had that happen twice now. But the majority of them are between 8 to 10 weeks.
And you say that the bereavement dolls is a small percentage of your business. What percentage would it be?
Very small, very, very small, like 1-2% of my business, because even though the majority of my customers have the dolls for comfort as opposed to pornographic reasons, the customers that brought them because someone has died is a lot smaller. When I say comfort reasons, it's genuinely people who are lonely and have dolls just to sit in their home or to lie in their bed. Because I have customers who I know for a fact do not do anything sexual with dolls. You know, because they do not have certain parts.
And even though, as you say, it is a small percentage, with the amount of media attention that you're drawing because of this, like again, I saw you on television, and I'm sure you're doing a lot of other media interviews, is that side of your business picking up a little bit?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the customization part of my business is massive. I customize a lot of dolls, but it's brought obviously attention to, you know, my love gloves and my designer dildos, because I use Instagram influencers and porn stars. Obviously, I do replicas of their parts. It's brought a massive amount of business my way. It's been fantastic. I mean, I find it a little bit intrusive. You know, I'm not intrusive. Maybe that's the wrong word, but I'm not necessarily an outgoing person in that respect. You know, I am just a businesswoman. I'm a mother of four. You know, I just, it's been welcomed. It has, of course, you know, but it's a different world. The media is a different world to what I'm used to working in.
How much do these sell for?
They vary in price. So they go from, the customized dolls vary from between £3,000 and £5,000.
£3,000 and £5,000, so that's...
But you can buy, yeah, it's a hefty amount of money, but, you know, I've got PayPal on my website, you know, so you can use a credit card, you can use credit terms, because obviously PayPal offer a credit service. But my smaller items, like my love gloves and my designer dildos, they're just £80, and that's a much cheaper option, obviously. And then my buy for shaft dolls are just shy of £1,300, and my dolls, all the prices include all the customs duty and taxes, so, and delivery. So actually, in comparison to other people who sell dolls, they're quite reasonable.
And how far afield do you sell them? Do you sell them beyond the UK?
Worldwide.
Worldwide?
Yes, it's worldwide. I mean, the States is massive. America's a huge market. Huge.
Well, this is absolutely fascinating. You mentioned you're a mother of four, and I'm just wondering,
I am.
What do the kids say about this? I mean, you know, they must be pretty proud of mom.
Do you know, everybody is always fascinated about what my children think about the business that I'm in. And my children, they do not have a negative opinion about it at all. They have had the same group of friends, and we've lived in the same house for a very long time, so... We, you know, all of the school mums and dads, they know us. They know who we are as people, and we are just business people. I mean, you know, yes, this isn't our preference. This is not something that is our preference, but that doesn't mean that it's wrong. It doesn't mean, you know, we're not doing anything illegal. We are providing a very, very nice service to lots of customers. I've had many, many emails. I went to a wedding this weekend, and I had an email of a customer explaining, you know, how amazing it is, you know, the service services that were provided to him and the change made to his life, he has testicular cancer. And, you know, it's changed his life. You know, so therefore, my children, they see this, you know, and so they have no ill feeling towards it whatsoever.
Well, congratulations on the business. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is sexdollofficial.com. Jade, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Jade Stanley, owner of the company Sex Doll Official. You can go to my website at thestuffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0515, and you'll find links to her site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
Two men were arrested for attempting to sell stolen power tools to a Pittsburgh police officer. According to police, an off-duty officer in plain clothes was working in East Liberty when the two men approached him. They have been identified as 36-year-old Samuel Gould and 40-year-old Douglas Franz. Police said Franz had a pillowcase slung over his shoulder. Franz asked the officer if he wanted to buy some power tools. The officer then asked the suspect where he got them from. The man said he had just acquired them and they were brand new and still in the box. The officer then checked inside the pillowcase and saw the tools were still in boxes with Home Depot labels. The officer then announced that he was a police officer and the men took off running. Additional officers quickly caught up with the two men, who both had outstanding warrants. Police arrested the pair and the stolen tools were returned to Home Depot. Now, why, oh why, would you walk down the street with a pillowcase full of stolen merchandise, especially when everyone knows that a pillowcase over your shoulder is the very cartoon announcement of a burglar, and then walk up to a complete stranger to try to sell said merch without giving a thought to the idea that said stranger might be a law-abiding citizen, never mind a cop? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0515. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0515. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.